Good morning, everybody. This is Julie with the Iowa Healthcare Association. Welcome to our monthly MCO call with Amerigroup. Brandon is on vacation this week, so I'll be running this call today. So let's go ahead and start by seeing who we have on this Zoom call from Amerigroup. Do we have any folks from Amerigroup with us yet? If you're speaking, you are muted. I'm not hearing you. Well, let me go ahead and just start off by, for those folks that may not have been on our first call with Iowa Total Care, walking through the ILs that have been released since we have met last. Our first IL is informational letter 2258. Department of Human Services released this for nursing facility reimbursement rates. In this IL, it explains that rate sheets for 7/1/21 and 10/1/21 will be mailed out to providers starting on 8/6. So I'm guessing that some of the folks on here have received those, and they will also be submitted to the MCOs for upload to their system. The release of the rates at this time is being done without receiving approval from CMS of the state plan amendment. DHS is making an exception to their normal process in response to the challenges faced by provider related to the public health emergency. The other two ILs that I want to talk about is informational letter 2250 and informational letter 2252. These updates are a result of a $2 million LUPA appropriation and the $11 million HCBS provider appropriation that was secured during the 2021 legislative session. This appropriation moves LUPA rates up to 91.71% of the state geographic wage adjusted Medicare LUPA rate, while the HCBS increase results in a 3.55% increase in rates for elderly waiver services with the dates of service on or after 7/1/21. Again, that was IL 2250 and IL 2252. There was also a couple other nursing facility case mix ILs in July, and those were posted in our bulletins in the last couple of weeks, along with the three that I just went over today. We'll go back and see if we have some folks with Amerigroup with us.
Julie Stewart is on.
Hi, good Joel. Morning. John McCauley is on.
So we have Julie and John. Are you guys expecting anybody else?
Angela, Donna, and Danielle.
Angela, Donna, and Danielle.
And I thought I saw Angela on the list. Angela, are you on mute?
If you're talking, Angela, we're not hearing you.
Yeah, I'll go out and IM the three of them to see if they're being held up.
Hi, Donna Wendt just joined from Amerigroup.
Thanks, Donna.
So it looks like we're waiting for Angela and Danielle. If you two are on, just let me know. Do you want me to start without Donna and Danielle by chance? Or Angela and Danielle, sorry. Donna is on.
I think we can go ahead and get started unless, John, you're waiting for something specific.
And I'm okay with that. I did give an update on the informational letters that came out since we've last met. So now would be the time I could turn it over to Amerigroup if they have any announcements for the group since we were together last.
Sorry, I was on mute typing. I am to make sure that I had all of the attendees correctly listed or indicated for the call, and I'm waiting for some responses. So Amerigroup's update today, August 11th, 2021, is, you know, we're still very deeply coordinated with IME and Iowa Total Care and other stakeholders in both the COVID monitoring, mitigation, and vaccination awareness and outreach. We, you know, we've made more than 200,000 outreach calls, IMs or emails over the course of the last few months to Medicaid members that are Amerigroup members on the importance of vaccination and really trying to coordinate also with the Department of Public Health to access their systems that track those individuals who have gone through one phase or a full dose of the vaccinations that are available to better understand Medicaid members who are Amerigroup members that have been vaccinated, partially vaccinated, or not vaccinated at all, so that we can better target our efforts. We feel that the time is even more critical to communicate those messages now with the uptick in and spread of the Delta variant. So a lot of work going on there. We continue to look for creative ways to partner with organizations that are sort of on the front lines. I'm very pleased to announce today that the Anthem Foundation, which is the Anthem is the parent company of Amerigroup, our philanthropic foundation has donated $25,000 to the Iowa Healthcare Association Foundation for the purposes of supporting the overall COVID mitigation efforts for providers that are on the front lines, in particular, providing up to, not limited to, PPE, vaccination awareness, and other support that the Iowa Healthcare Association Foundation has been providing to providers since the onset of the pandemic, and recognizing that the ongoing support is still out there, and knowing that somewhere in the neighborhood of 40% of direct care workers are still not vaccinated. So just looking to support the work that the association is doing there. And more to come on that. I'm sure you'll see communications and newsletters, press announcements, or social media, however you're commonly getting your information like this from the foundation, Iowa Healthcare Foundation, to providers. So very pleased to share that with you. Under the circumstances, difficult times, and hopefully, you know, we can look for new opportunities to coordinate down the road as the continuation of this pandemic kind of drags out. We note that the presidential declaration has extended through October officially, which means that any of the state plan amendments to Medicaid will for sure extend through the end of the year per the approved amendments, allowing us to do 60 days beyond the end of the official presidential proclamation. It isn't clear whether that is actually going to be the end, considering the uptick in the Delta virus and the high-risk counties, even in Iowa. So more to come on that. I know the association tracks that very closely as well. You know, with that, I don't think I have any other updates. We shared last week that our LTSS case managers have returned to the field. And that's a little bit more relevant to some providers than others. But they are continuing their face-to-face visits with members who are willing to do face-to-face members. So that is an exciting development. And so I'll stop there and see if Julie or Donna or the rest of the team has any other updates that they want to provide on behalf of AmeriGroup.
This is Julie. I guess I will just give an update on our staffing, just to let people know that we have had a few resignations changing in provider relations positions. There will be a new map on the website, I'm hoping by the end of this week. So you may have to reach out to a different provider rep in the interim. We're just covering for the absences that we have while we're in the process of hiring. But if you, I'm trying to think, Amy Underwood would have been the primary person I think this group would have reached out to, but also Sean Martin or Mary Brandt, if you had worked with them previously, their last day is Friday. So if there's any questions, I would just direct you to the site. But it's not updated yet. So within a couple days, and actually I could probably just send it out to this group too, if that would be helpful before it hits the website.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind sending that to Brandon and me as well, that would be great.
Yeah, if I just send that updated map to, I'm assuming, is this Julie?
This is Brandon. Julie, yep.
Okay. Yep. And then you can disseminate before it hits our website. That would be helpful. That'll just avoid more emails. Thank you.
Yep. Absolutely. Any other updates from AmeriGroup? Okay. I'll go ahead then and we'll get into the pre-submitted questions, and then I had several come in yesterday and today, and we do have several in the chat, but we'll start with the ones that were sent over first. Question number one was, I know we have discussed this before, but can you explain the process used by AmeriGroup when new patients are admitted to home health agency and they are needing to provide services prior to receiving an authorization?
Hi, this is Angela. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure I got off mute officially. okay, so the prior authorizations for home care, there are those five visits at the start of care that don't require pre-cert if the member hasn't had any services for that code in the last 90 days. So I know we've had that question before about how to check that, and we never got really any guidance on how efficiently a provider would be able to check that. So what a lot of times providers do is they will go ahead and submit the PA form with some information about like maybe the order for home care or a referral form or something or some discharge paperwork into us and say, we just want some initial eval visits and admission visits to get the plan of care developed and get started. And then we can approve those, for a short amount of time, a week or two. And then that gives the provider time to get their plan of care all done. And, so we know what the actual visit frequency would be and what the nurse will be doing in the home. And then they submit the full, you know, for the rest of the cert period with the plan of care, because we can't approve a whole 60 days at the start of care without a plan of care with all that information on it. Does not have to be signed by the physician at all. We don't require that by any means. But yeah, sometimes we'll see requests come in, you know, a PA form, it's a start of care, and they want 18 nursing visits, 18 PT, 18 OT or whatever, and there's no plan of care exemption out there. We can't do anything with that. We could, you know, give you, like I said, some initial visits for a week or two. So you'll usually get a phone call from one of the review nurses to discuss that, because we can't change anything on there without discussing it with a provider. But that's how we've been doing it in outpatient. And Donna says that's how they've been taking care of it in LTSS for the waiver members as well.
So for those folks that are using the five visits to start working with the plan of care, I just want to verify those five visits do need to be added in the plan of care when the final one comes over, correct?
Do you mean, I'm trying to see if they would still put them on the air. They would still have them on the plan of care like normal.
Okay.
It's just you wouldn't put those dates of service. Don't put those retro dates of service on the PA form because they'll be admin denied. They won't allow us to go back and pre-cert it, if that makes sense. Like if you admitted them on August 8th and or August 1st and you were planning on using those five visits, but then you submitted it to us a week later, but you had it dated as starting 8-1. We can't do that. We can only start it from the date that you submitted the request.
So if they use the five visits, those are not on the plan of care because that would be for that's before the plan of care was put together. Correct?
Right, but they're still going to date. I mean, but on the plan of care, they're just putting a visit frequency on there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they can't change their plan of care because that's part of the, you know, conditions of participation, how they have to, you know, the surveyors are going to be looking at, you know, how you are.
No, I understand that. But my point is, if they're using the five pass-through visits, those need to be included. So if they did two nursing visits as pass-throughs, they are part of the plan of care.
I think I'm understanding. I'm not sure if I'm really understanding anything, but
all visits are part of the plan of care.
They wouldn't be. Are you talking about on the PA form how many they're asking for?
Nope.
They would include the number they're asking for on them.
Nope. If you want to reach out to me at the association, I can walk you through that.
Yes, that would be great.
Okay. Will Amerigroup create another project to reprocess claims for correct payment after the new rates are established, or will we have to file a claim reconsideration?
This is Julie. I can answer that. I mean, as we've said, every time there's a rate update, if you have billed to cover the increased rate, we will reprocess the claim. If you didn't know or, you know, didn't have the rate at the time that it was billed, then you do need to submit a corrected claim. Amerigroup will only pay up to billed charges. So even if the rate goes up, we are unable to pay you more than you billed us. That's how you determine whether you need to submit a corrected claim or whether we can reprocess ourselves.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Is there a no?
You know, and just to one before we leave that topic, just a point of clarification. I'm assuming this is a question about nursing facility rates. Is that right, Julie Adair?
So it would be that and or the rates that are increasing for the HCBS waiver increase and LUPA. LUPA wouldn't be you, okay. But HCBS and nursing facility would be.
Okay. I don't know about the other, but I know that the nursing facility rate file was received last Friday, August 6th, and that we will have them configured in 30 days, then claims will be reprocessed. When I get some information about the other rates from ops, we can share that information too.
Perfect. Is there a known issue for when providers submit claims that did not automatically cross over from Medicare? Provider having issues with them being rejected. They were told to submit claims within the guidelines without specifying what the guidelines she was referring to.
So we're not aware of a broad issue, and it would be very helpful for us if you would work with your provider experience rep to get examples, specific claim level examples for us to research it further.
For whoever submitted that, because I don't have that, it went to Brandon. If you want to reach back out to Brandon or your provider rep, that would be great. Any updates on the recoupment project that are inappropriately taking back funds from home health agencies? And this would be referring to the cost containment issue with the cost containment unit.
Julie, do you want me to go first and you can clean me up?
Sure.
Yeah. So we have taken this to our ops folks and our cost containment unit and provided the information that Brandon gathered from a few of the home health care providers and put on a spreadsheet and sent over to me. We sent that spreadsheet to them to be reviewed. The examples, some of the examples were reviewed yesterday and were found to have been recouped accurately. The providers that did indicate that they had sent corrected claims are being reviewed by cost containment review team. They'll override timely filing if necessary. After the final review of current disputes, inquiries, and complaints occurs, if there are overarching themes or messages, we can send that to providers. The provider experience team can reach out to the impacted providers, and myself and or Julie Storr will reach out to Iowa Healthcare Association for dissemination as well. So I think that the overarching message is that to add on to this, the program integrity team is doing a full review of disputes and inquiries. So we've got the department looking at this project as a whole, and more details are to come. But it's important to note that there is a group of claims that have never billed correctly due to any of the billing guidance. And so recoupments, many of the recoupments are valid. And that's something that we verified in the review of the material that the Iowa Healthcare Association itself sent to us and reviewed yesterday. So more ongoing review is occurring. We've got the program integrity office doing a thorough project-wide review, and more details will be coming from that. And I will pause there and see if Julie needs to clean me up on any of those details.
Okay, sorry, struggling to get off mute. I think you did a really good job, John. I guess I would again highlight if you submitted corrected claims to fix the issue, and those are being reviewed as well, we want to make sure that we've captured all those. And then again, just to reiterate, there were some that were appropriate. And so I feel like, you know, at some point providers thought there was never going to be some that weren't appropriate. But they're the ones that we, like he said, the ones we reviewed yesterday, the claim image did not show any of the guidance that was ever given to indicate that the members were homebound or not homebound. Sorry. So just wanted to make that clear as well.
And I think we have a couple questions we'll get to in the chat. A follow-up question is, I know the last two calls we've asked for the process that providers should expect when submitting a dispute to the cost containment unit. We've yet to receive the process because providers are faxing the dispute in and are getting no acknowledgement that it was received. And then all of a sudden a letter appears that the money has been taken back after they have faxed all the information that needs to go over. So do we have a protocol or a process that we can give to members? Because when you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars, they need to know that their dispute was received.
I mean, currently they do not have, they do not acknowledge the receipt. You know, we have brought that to their attention that that does make it confusing. But at this time, there is no acknowledgement of that receipt. And some of it's timing, which I know no one is going to like that answer, but depending on when you receive the first notification, I have seen examples where it's been very fast. I will completely acknowledge that, where the provider submitted the dispute and the claim was recouped within that 60 days. So that is something that we are working on with the department as a whole on just cleaning up that process and making it more transparent for providers. But that we don't have that cleaned up right now, but it is not, you're not going to get an acknowledgement that you have submitted your dispute. You can call into the inquiry line about it and I can get that number while we're talking.
That would be great. And do you know, are they going to be working on a process for notification? Because just receiving nothing is not appropriate.
I mean, I can't speak to that today. I can't speak for the, you know, for another department, but it's definitely been brought to their attention.
And I'm going to just address one quick question while we're on this that is the latest one in the chat. It says, I thought Z7689 had to be in the second position. I'm going to clarify that for you. It needs to be in a secondary position. You do not want a Z code in the first five spots because that affects your payment and how your payment's calculated. So because this is not, the Z code is not a payment code, you would not want it in the number two slot because then you're messing with your quality payment. And that's not where you would want it, unless you truly only have two diagnoses, then it obviously would be in the second position, which would be the last position. I just want to verify with Amerigroup that's their understanding as well, because this is when the Z code is initially released. I think you were asking for it in the second position, and when it was brought to your attention that needed to be in a secondary position, that was changed, correct?
Correct. And I just want to, I'm sorry, I'm multitasking. So the Z code has to be in any secondary position. And we were told from you guys, we've initially said second, and we were told for you guys that cannot be done. So then it was changed to be in any secondary position.
I just wanted to verify that was still.
Yes, it is.
And that they
thank you.
Excited for that. Thank you so much. All right. Let's go on to a couple others that were submitted after questions went over. We have a client, once again, that received a letter from Amerigroup saying that they denied payment to us as the provider is not participating with your plan. Notification has been previously been provided. Services are therefore not a covered benefit. We are assuming this is due to the DSNP program, the DSNP program, but this has caused great confusion with our clients and puts them in a great state of fear surrounding their care. We have asked about the contracting with the DSNP program for a month and still have not had a reach out from anyone. Can anybody talk to that?
So I know we talked about that letter before, and I thought we had got those suppressed. So if I'm understanding you correctly, this was recent. If you can get me that, who that provider is, I can address that. As far as the Medicare network, if you are reaching out about entering the Medicare network, I will just say that we're working through those as quickly as we can. Again, I can pass off that information, the provider, to our contracting team. I can't speak to where they are with expanding the network or at least getting those contracts out. I know that it is a goal this year to, you know, expand our network, but I can't speak today about how they are going about that or choosing which counties or providers to expand that into.
Okay. And I think we had just a comment here on this follow-up to addition to the same person. It's a home health agency continuing to see denials for the RNLPN, the G299, and the G300. Okay. Question, who can we contact if our provider rep doesn't respond? It had previously been Danielle, but now it is Amy Underwood. And they've emailed her a few claims and they need help getting reprocessed, but haven't received any communication back.
You can start with me, Julie.
Would you mind just throwing your email in the chat there?
Yes. Yep.
That would be great. Okay, question on the G156, so the home health aid. I have a provider with home health. They're having an issue with this code, only being paid at 16 visits for the client. They are splitting off the rest of the visits on the remittance and paying zero. They also had reached out to Amy Underwood and no response. Voicemail is full. Automatic reply and email says our last day with Amerigroup is fast approaching. This particular G156 code doesn't require an off. So wondering why it's being capped at 16 visits. If somebody's talking, you're muted there.
I can step in, and Julie, I know this is your team, but I think something like that, we would have to see it to see all aspects of what's happening. We can't just assume, you know what I mean, what the problem is. It could be a membership issue. It could be a billing issue. I think we just need to see. We can't really answer that broad question. Am I correct, Julie?
Having huge issues with my mute button today. But yes, and I wasn't sure if that question was in the chat. It was very long. So I think it's safe to say, without looking at the actual example, I can't speak to it off the cuff.
Would it, this is Julie with IHC. Would it be fair to say that, that there isn't a cap on home health day visits at any certain number?
I mean, I would revert to the UM people, but I don't believe so. A cap versus what's authorized is different.
I would have to pull up a case and look at the benefit summary, but isn't it like 28 visits?
28 hours a week.
Hours, there we go. Mm-hmm.
For G0156.
But we're billing visits, so how do you know the hours?
So IMH just clarified that a visit could be up to 2 hours, and so that's our standard definition of what we're identifying a visit to be.
But I could have 1 hour visits, and they could be, I could be doing three a day and still be under my 28 hour mark. So how can you, a visit is defined as 0 to 2, 3, actually, it's up to 3 hours. My understanding was there is no authorization limit or authorization required on home health aides, correct?
The only limitation that we have is 28 hours per week. And so that was the question that was posed.
Right.
That's the only limit that I know of.
Right. So if we're offing visits, I think Julie's question to the group was, there should be no denials for home health aid visits under the home health care plan on a billing. Correct?
Hi, my name's Carrie, and I'm actually the one that submitted this question because I've been dealing with this since March, and I have emailed Amy Underwood on several occasions, gave her several examples. I have spent at least 5 hours this week trying to get it straightened out. I am getting capped at 16 visits for every client for home health aid.
And this is Julie with IHCA. Are those 16 visits one hour visits in length, or are they longer?
It doesn't matter. A visit is a visit.
Right.
And this is one of my frustrations with home health aid for Amerigroup. If you don't do a prior authorization, I always put them on my prior authorization forms just due to the fact that I've had it denied saying that it was not prior authorized. So I have faxed in information where we do so many visits per month. That's how we do it. Like this client that I'm looking at had 22 visits submitted. You paid 16, 6 were denied. Another client, 30 visits for the month. 16 were paid, 14 were denied. On every client that I have for home health aid, you only pay 16. So for me, that is telling me there's an issue within your system.
Is this new? Or has this always been an issue?
It's been an issue since March. And I've been trying to get it straightened out since March.
But just since March, right?
Is that accurate? Correct.
Okay.
That's accurate.
Let's just narrow it down at least.
What's that?
That just helps narrow it down that I don't know if something changed recently. That's what I'm. And I apologize. Did you happen to include me in your email to Amy on this issue? Or if not, will you just send it claim examples again so I can have those just kind of check our what's going on in the system?
Brandon has it all, and I don't know who this is. So the only two people I talked to was Brandon and Amy.
Okay,
this is
Julie Stewart, sorry.
Julie Riggs has it as well. Brandon forwarded it to her.
Okay.
So basically what it's telling me for a code is I-12. Units have been adjusted to reflect the allowed amount for this code, which is not correct.
Julie Stewart, are you able to check into that and get back to Brandon and I?
Yeah, I'll have to look at the examples. And I mean, it just sounds like something changed in the system, which is why I was asking if it was recent.
Yeah, and this is Donna Nguyen. We don't prior authorize the G0156 anymore. So I'm wondering if there, like to Julie's point, that there might have been something that kind of changed in the config on the back end regarding the payment. And so that I think we can probably try and figure that out, and then Julie can get back to the group.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Because that shouldn't be happening. I agree.
I'm gonna.
Well,
I'm gonna ask one more pre-submitted question that came in late, and then we'll go to the chat. And this one is in regards to the COVID reimbursement for skilled nursing for the additional $300 per day. They're wanting to verify the correct way to bill these claims and the timely filing deadline to get these paid. And they've given an example here, which I will read. Submit three separate adjustment claims, all at the same time with 217. Example, day 1 through 5, room and board. Day 6 through 10 with a DR and a U70.1. On the first adjustment claim, you would just have the room and board. The second COVID adjustment claim, you will need a DR in the box for the condition code and the diagnosis code of a U70.1. You will need three separate lines as follows, and they gave an example of day 1 through 5, day 6 through 10, and day 11 through 30. In the notes section, add COVID billed on these three separate claims. Is that how they should handle these claims that denied for timely filing if within the timely filing limit? Is that the process for you guys?
I think so. That was pretty complicated. So, I mean, what's most important is you separate out your COVID days. Yes. So if I understood you correctly, day 1 through 5, you bill the per diem.
Correct.
Then the COVID days you want to bill your claim line should be, we'll say, you know, 6 through the 10th. You bill the per diem plus the $300 per day on top of that. And so the bill charges should be the per diem plus the $300.
Correct.
Then the rest of the month, that claim line is however many days times your per diem. And Perfect. Then, yes, you need the DR code on the claim.
And then the diagnosis code of U70.1.
Is that the COVID diagnosis?
It would be, yep.
Sorry. I don't know that off the top of my head, but yes, that sounds good. Yep.
Okay. So what they gave as an example for that is how it works. Perfect. So I'm going to scroll way up to the top of the chat here. And we had a person who didn't get their questions up to Brandon. So the first one was, we have a member that has IHAW and is new to the vent, trach, and PEG tube feeding. She was denied continued skilled stay simply based on the fact that she's not actively weaning. She still requires daily skilled nursing care for ventilator management, trach cares, including but not limited to trach cares, changes, etc., and tube feeding management. When I questioned the decision being made, my point was, if there were a Medicare recipient, there would be no question they would meet skilled criteria based on CMS guidelines. The UM nurse I spoke to did not know what CMS stood for. What are the precise criteria for a IHA member who is on a ventilator? The MCG guidelines that were provided to me were very vague, and based on what I read, our member would not have been denied. I reached out to our provider advocate via phone and email with no response back. is that Julie Sturr's group? Donna, I'm not sure if one of you is talking, you're on mute.
No, this is Donna. I think if it's an Iowa Health and Wellness member, which is what it sounds like, I think that would probably go to Angela's group since it's not LTSS.
Angela, are you still on?
I'm here. What was the question?
It's number one in the chat.
Oh, let me look here. About looper rates?
Number one is about the Iowa Health and Wellness. Is it they have a patient that's a new vent trach and PEG tube feeding? She was denied continued skilled stay simply based on the fact that she's not actively weaning. That question.
This is home health.
Donna thought it would not be home health. No.
No, it's not home health. Sorry, I was thinking it was an at home service. Sorry.
Scared me for a second.
We'd have to probably take that back to our inpatient team.
I'll let you, if you're able to do that, and then get back to Brandon.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the number one in here. So
it's the very now, first.
Our chat is set up differently than your chat, and we're not seeing them numbered in the order that you're seeing it.
It's the very first one, very first question in the chat for me.
Yeah, ours are.
From Melissa.
Next question is Amerigroup Medicare Advantage plans. Will recipients be automatically enrolled or will they be given a choice between traditional Medicare and the MA plan?
It's always the member's choice.
Okay. Cost sharing. If the members are automatically enrolled, this will affect SNFs with their Medicare CO insurance reporting. CMS guidelines mandate that if a Medicare recipient has an MA plan with a Medicare secondary, the MCR insurance cannot be added to the cost report as reimbursable bad debt. It is simply a bad debt write-off. Are there any plans to remedy this or will it simply be a loss on the SNF end?
I don't think we can answer that question.
Are you able to take that back?
Yeah, I'll have to find it in our chat too, because let me scroll down and find the question.
Will the MA follow PDPM reimbursement methodology?
I believe we previously answered that question in the affirmative. I will find that language that we sent over to you. Probably 3 months ago, and resend it.
Okay, that would be a yes then. Okay. We keep receiving audit letters with the final notice, even though we responded with a dispute already from the first letter of the cost containment unit. After talking with dispute department, they're behind. It's taking longer than 45 days to process our dispute, but for some reason, our monies are getting recouped before the dispute can be go through the whole process. And it sounds like you're going to be addressing that and they're aware that that's a problem, correct?
Correct.
All right. And then we've addressed the next one on my screen, which is that Amy Underwood's leaving. So sounds like they're going to get us a new map, and we will get that out on our communication platforms for y'all. How long will it take for Amerigroup to get the new LUPA rates loaded into their system? We're about to send our monthly billing and would rather wait if it will not be too long, as opposed to having to wait for reimbursement later on the difference.
I think John was trying to get that information. We didn't have that prior to the call, so I'm not sure if we have received those to date yet.
It sounds like you get 30 days once you receive the file. Would that be accurate?
So on the nursing facility rates, we got them last Friday, and we'll have them configured in 30 days. I don't know when the other rates are being sent by IME, and I don't know when we will have them configured as a result of that. We'll need to get that information from our ops team.
So would you say, would it be accurate to say you do not have LUPA rate file yet?
No, I don't know if it's accurate or inaccurate.
Okay, perfect. Okay, let's see. And you answered, when will the Amerigroup have the SNF rates loaded? What do we do if a member does not tell us they have Amerigroup until after the filing guideline? Do we bill the patient? We have had claims in this scenario denied for timely filing.
It's the provider's responsibility to verify eligibility. I guess provider, the member presents as having no insurance. Is that? And you have 180 days to file the claim.
My guess is the issue there would be if it's home health, they would have been providing cares without an off. Peyton, if you want to clarify that.
What service would you providing without any insurance, or is it just not knowing who the insurance was? I have questions, I guess.
Sure. We'll all continue to scroll down and see if she clarifies that. The next one on my screen is you didn't this person is talking about a previous question, claims that are not crossing over from Medicare to Amerigroup that are 99 claim lines and over are being submitted to Amerigroup via clearinghouse and are rejecting. But if the claims cross over from Medicare, there is not an issue with the claims processing. That was, I think, a follow-up to question three. Is there a known issue for when providers submit claims that did not automatically cross over from Medicare? Providers are having issues with them being rejected. They were not told to submit claims within the guidelines without specifying what guidelines. And I think they were following up with the rest of that question, that claims are not crossing over from Medicare to Amerigroup that are 99 claim lines and over are being submitted to Amerigroup via clearinghouse. Claims that have not crossed over from Medicare have been submitted via electronic claim file through our clearinghouse, Waystar, to Amerigroup. Claims that exceed 99 claim lines are being rejected by the payer, Amerigroup. This is only occurring on the claims that do not cross over from Medicare. I've been in contact with Sherry L. Smith Martinez, manager provider experience at Amerigroup, and the only thing she has said was that the claims need to be resubmitted within the guidelines. She did not reference the guidelines, but I'm assuming that we would have to manually break down the lines by line payments from Medicare to determine what they pay on each line and put that on one portion of the Amerigroup claim and do the same for the second half of the claim. 6-2, they spoke with Jennifer at Amerigroup regarding 16 claims that had been rejected for the same reason, over 99 claim lines. Then they put a reference number in there. And they've had not had any response since 6-2. Is that something you guys can look into on the reference that they put in there, the number? Julie or Donna or John, are you able to take that reference number down and check into that?
Sorry, I was on mute. Yes, we will. I am familiar with the person who had been talking to Cherie. I'm familiar with that. I don't have the answer, but I am familiar with the topic, and we'll look into that further.
Thank you so much. With regards to the recoupment for the Medicare primary payer issue, I believe we were told the Z7689 codes need to be in the claim. However, the position of the diagnosis didn't matter. I've had a few deny and now are in recoupment where the code was on there along with the XB modifier and yet still are being asked to recoup. When I look on my end, the Z code was in the 14th position. Is this okay or does it need to be in a certain position? It does not need to be in a certain position. It just needs to be on the claim in a secondary position, meaning anywhere after the first position. And I addressed that. Someone has gone on to say, if you have 25 codes, then you can't put it in the 25th position. The claim will only hold so many. Because it needs to be on there, if you have 30, you're going to have to, they're all not going to go through, so you'd have to get it in a higher position. But you don't want it in a quality position that's going to affect your payment. And then Julie Sturr put her email in there. Casey had a question on the 299 and the 300, the RNLPN codes that were getting denied. I'm not sure, Casey, I don't know that they addressed it. Your nursing codes would need an authorization.
Right. We don't have to do the, both codes are accepted for nursing. We don't have to break it out. And that's where I think it's getting confused. And in this, you know, we kind of seem to, it goes good for a couple months and this kind of seems to regroup again.
So I just want to add something to that. So we had a bunch of claims denied for that issue again. And when I sent them to my provider rep, I was told it was because I only had auth for G0299 and not G0300. And we've done this now since 2016, that those codes are interchangeable. So I'm not sure how I have a provider rep that doesn't understand that.
Do you have any follow-up on that, Angela?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
So the two codes in our system, on what we see in UM, in facets, is it's the same UM service group. It all falls under the AHSN in our system. So I'm not sure why it makes a difference, but for providers that put it on their PA form, we'll add it into our nurse note when we write it, you know, that we don't separate out the visits, but yeah, we can put both codes.
It should not be necessary for me to request both codes. CMS recognizes them as interchangeable codes. So we get it fixed, and it's fixed for about 6 months, and then we do it again, and it takes 6 months to fix it. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how it continues to happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, we can add it to the note, but like you said, it shouldn't matter for the billing part of it.
Yeah. And so just to clarify what Angela is saying, this is Donna, by the way, when you submit multiple codes, we have something called a utilization management service group. And so similar codes that fall into a family or a category, we combine those all into this blanket. And so we authorize, especially like the G0299 and the G0300, we'll put those into that blanket. So on the front end, there shouldn't be any issue. So on the back end is where it might be. And so I think Julie is going to take that back and figure out what's going on with that payment. Because on the front end for the authorization, there shouldn't be a problem.
And I agree. And I think my bigger problem is then when I take it to my provider rep, they don't know the difference either.
I mean, to be fair, this is Julie. It's the way the claim is processed. So our provider reps do not know every individual claim CPT code that is accurate. But we can have it submitted to, it's the claims operations that did it incorrectly the first time. So have you attempted to appeal them yourself?
Well, Julie, this is Casey, and I'm going to tell you, I mean, I can feel myself probably going to say some not very nice things. I mean, this is just getting silly. We're 5 years into this deal. I shouldn't have to reprocess. I refuse to reprocess. This is your issue. This is your processing team, your auth issues. You need to fix it with your team. This is not a provider issue.
I'm going to push back on, there are always going to be errors made. I mean, every insurance company that you deal with, you're going to have to redo something.
I've never experienced this nightmare in my life, and I've been doing this 25 years, Julie, so that's no longer acceptable. This is a systemic issue.
Well, and even if it is a one-off and mistakes are made, then my provider rep should not argue with me about me billing incorrectly or my auth isn't correct. If it is known that those are same services and they're authorized that way, then even if it's a one-off issue where the claim is processed incorrectly, then my provider rep should be able to fix it. And I shouldn't have to go back and educate her on what is or is not appropriate for billing.
I would agree that you do not need to educate the provider rep, but if you find an error that you know is an error, when you find it, it is our process that you need to appeal it yourself first.
I shouldn't have to appeal a claim that is denied by you in error. These are they're systemic processing issues. They are systemic errors. It's 5 years.
That is our process. We are unable. We cannot escalate every single claim that we do incorrectly. It's not.
Then I think you need to look at how your claims are processing and fix it. Because for 5 years, this has been an issue and it shouldn't be an issue anymore. And I and my staff shouldn't have to spend days and days and days appealing claims that are denied in error.
This is Julie with the Iowa Healthcare Association. So I'm going to step in here just for a minute. We are a little bit past our time, and I know we have more questions. So I will pull those once the recording has downloaded. My final question here, and I'll visit with Brandon upon his return, is it sounds like we have a known issue now with the 299-300 processing incorrectly. Is that something Amerigroup can get on the log and get somebody to look at? It sounds like it's been a problem and fixed, So is that something now that it's known that you can get a group to work with?
I mean, Julie, the issue is analyst education. So we do that all the time. It's not a configuration error. It's an analyst error. And anytime that is brought to our attention, yes, we go back and educate. If it comes up again, it's probably because we have new analysts on staff. That's why it appears cyclical.
So I'll let you take that back to your team. And I'll visit with Brandon on that. And at this point, for the home health folks, if you want to reach out to Brandon and I, if we to see how big of an issue we have with this particular code and the interchangeability of it, please shoot those examples off to Brandon and I. We can go ahead and collect those. And if need be, we'll get that back to Amerigroup and DHS to have a look at that issue as well. So I'll pull the rest of the questions here. We're at 12:35, so I want to thank everybody for joining us today and for the Amerigroup team for being on with us. I also want to thank Anthem for their foundation donation to help support the COVID mitigation efforts on our front lines with our membership. We are excited to get that money out there and are very thankful to have been able to partner with Anthem on that. So I want to say thanks for joining, and everybody have a safe and cool weekend after these next couple of days. And as always, feel free to reach out to Brandon and I with questions in between our calls. We'll be happy to help with those and get answers as we need to ahead of the calls as well. So thanks everybody for joining, and have a great rest of your week.